It's on.
Okay.
It's all on.
Everything's on.
We'll see.
We'll find out when you publish it.
Should we walk up the nice thing there, do one ring, like go really fancy?
Yeah, let's do that.
And then we'll just, wherever the kind of sound landscape takes us.
Yeah.
Because you'll have to understand one thing, once you snap the mics on, sound will just magically appear and things will just get noisy. People with leaf blowers will start hunting you.
It's probably like a biaser, you know, like it's always noisy.
Yeah, I mean, you usually don't focus on these things. John Vervaeke would say your whole salience landscape changes once you start recording. That's what he would say. So suddenly you focus on, you know, everything is noise. If you're in the sauna and it gets really hot, everything that, you know, is water might, cold water might be appealing. Like if you're really thirsty, everything suddenly becomes a way to get water. And so on. Anyway, Cheese Sovereignty, how have you been?
Very good.
All right.
And there's the noise.
See?
It's a I car told this
you.
Time.
I told you. Suddenly there's motorbikes, everything. It's been a while.
It's been a very long time. I think the last time we talked really was in Madeira.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that's the last time I saw you.
Yeah. Yeah, you were one of the early ones, one of our guinea pigs, basically.
Yeah.
When we didn't really know what we were doing.
Yeah, but
not that we like improved a lot, but you know, it's a little bit better.
What's different now?
We try to keep the things that work. We added some new things. There's a little bit more structure, a little bit more kind of rules. Vibe coding changed a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Now that we have vibe coding, one of the new rules is you have to demo something new every week. So it has to be a new idea. You can still show whatever, like other stuff, but at least one new thing you have to show every week. So there's a bunch of vibe coding change, a lot of things. Yeah, no slides. That's an important one.
That's a good rule.
Demo days, only demos. We say this over and over and over again. And if you show one single slide during a demo day, you'll just be shot. We have like an AK-47 handy. And you'll just be executed on the spot. No, we're very serious about it. It's like you'll be booed out of the building. It's like it just doesn't fly. Now you can come up with like a working demo. It should take you like 10 seconds to build, basically.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense with the speed that you can build now.
Yeah.
And also there, it doesn't matter if you build slop.
No, it's the whole point is it's a proof of concept demo. Does this make sense? Is the idea good? And so on. And speaking of does this make sense, that's what I want to talk to you about. Businesses without state involvement. Does it make sense? You've been in the business of building Nostra Rocket?
Yes.
For a long time?
Yeah.
And you told me you're still thinking about it, still excited about it, and still working on it and want to get back into it. So why don't you get me up to speed and kind of sketch out where you are, maybe how your thinking has evolved, what works now, what do you still want to build out? I'll shut up, you just go.
So, well, the core problem is that we don't have Bitcoin. If you look at it like a nation state, it doesn't have any exports. We're 100% dependent on imports for all of our products and services.
With the very few exceptions, if you're into soap and leather.
There are edge cases.
There are edge cases.
But so generally
a
speaking.
A leather mint wallet.
I mean, there are edge
the
cases.
Soap.
Yeah. There are edge cases no matter. You could probably like make trade like bottle caps for these things as well, right? there are edge cases. But
what about merchant adoption in places like Madeira or Bitcoin Jungle? Would you count that or no?
Are they keeping the Bitcoin or are they just...
Most of them are because it's less than 1%.
That's good.
Of their
I mean, it's a start, but that's not really... what's the source of economic power or...
You mean globally speaking?
Abstractly speaking. So
right now printing money.
Okay, that's the wrong way.
Petrodollar.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for.
Okay.
Petrodollar kind of because
give your own answer.
Ultimately, I think it ultimately comes down to energy. That's the source of everything.
Oh, Michael
right?
Saylor would love that. Are you saying that Bitcoin is digital energy? Now we're cooking.
I'm not saying Bitcoin is digital energy.
Now all of Bitcoin Twitter is suddenly listening.
And it's definitely not. Yeah. No, now yeah. We need to talk about price if you want all of them to listen.
Yeah, yeah. Are you reinventing Stretch? Are we going to get 12% instead of 11? Sorry, I'm derailing you completely. So energy is important.
Because then energy is what enables everything else to happen, right?
Yeah.
And, but I mean, we don't have to go... It's probably... See, if the ideal situation would be we just collaboratively build highly efficient energy production infrastructure.
But how come you're already on energy? If I understand you correctly, what you want to have is a proper... a proper parallel economy.
Yes.
Proper Bitcoin-only parallel, in the best case, circular economy.
Yeah, but the first step to doing that is understanding what the economy is.
Okay.
And I think that it's the source of the economy is energy. Because everything depends on
Isn't
energy.
Isn't that close to the theory of labor? Fallacy?
Possibly.
You can waste a lot of energy building a mud pie, right?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But you also need energy to do
it. But okay, let's get into it. All right, economy. What do you have? Inputs and outputs,
yeah.
Right? Some transformation in the middle. The transformation, I think one of the... I would agree that one of the knobs you can turn in the transformation process is energy.
Yeah.
It's also ingenuity and other things. But in the end, I mean... like Seyfedin would probably object to the thesis you laid out that it doesn't matter how you come to the product. The only measurement that is interesting is if people want to buy it. Doesn't matter how much energy you.
No. I totally agree with that. I'm just saying.
It's actually going up. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Why we're here.
We are
not only derailed, we also walked the wrong way. So we're off to a fantastic start.
I'm not saying
derailed the conversation and the path.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not saying,
hit me with
I'm
the
saying,
energy
I'm
thing.
I still don't
understand it.
So, the reason I mentioned energy is simply because that's one of it's required but not sufficient, right?
Okay.
For the economy to function, to produce goods and services.
Yeah.
Right? So, but. That doesn't mean we should necessarily produce energy and sell it for Bitcoin, although that would probably be a cool idea and pretty powerful. But we do need to produce goods and services as Bitcoiners.
I mean, in the Bitcoin economy, you could argue that most Bitcoiners are selling hash power to the Bitcoin network. No?
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Okay, I mean...
You're getting a stroke right now. Is it because all the big miners are public companies and just mining for fiat?
That's still... Anytime you want to actually use the Bitcoin that they've mined to buy something from the economy, though, you're creating demand for fiat because everything else is produced in the fiat system, in the fiat economy. And they want that trade to be settled in fiat.
Okay.
So...
Yeah,
if a shop accepts Bitcoin as payment, it's fine, it's cool, but the actual trade down the line is settled in fiat still.
Yeah,
at some point, even
see.
If the shop keeps the Bitcoin.
And just to play devil's advocate, what you're talking about, what you want to see, is more of the things I mentioned before, like Soap Miner, like Leathermint, like can't ever pronounce it, Isabello Art.
Yeah.
Where it's denominated in sets, only accept Bitcoin, and the people make these things to earn Bitcoin.
Yeah.
For no other reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
They only accept Bitcoin and they hold the Bitcoin. And so you wanna make more of those people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a Bitcoin standard means that you can't buy anything without Bitcoin.
Yeah, fair
That's
enough.
What a Bitcoin
Just like
standard is.
You go to the US, you can't buy anything without dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like because we need to buy things from the fiat economy and it creates a demand for fiat every time we buy something if we're playing in Bitcoin, that's an off-ramp, right? You have to off-ramp from Bitcoin into fiat.
Yeah, sure. It's a complicated chicken and egg thing because not all not all resellers, not all, not resellers, that's not the right, the merchants you work with don't accept Bitcoin, even if you yourself,
and even if they accept it, someone, their suppliers don't.
Yeah, suppliers, so, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah. Let's see what's over here. And what that means is we are dependent on these imports from the fiat economy, and we are dependent on off-ramps, which they can shut down.
All right, so allow me to make an analogy in terms of new world, old world. You're colonizing the new world, and you're still dependent on ships from Great Britain.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to say, yeah. Right, in some sense.
Yeah.
And you want to remove the dependence in some way. So what like we'll have to eventually get into Nostrocket and what it is and what, why do we need businesses outside of the current structures to make all that work? Like, close that loop for me. I think I understand the energy piece now.
But. Okay. So, well, the simple explanation is that when you operate as a business registered with the state, they regulate you. And that eliminates you from the Bitcoin economy.
Is regulation always bad?
Not necessarily, but it doesn't matter. They hold all of the cards. So if they say you can't use Bitcoin, you can't use Bitcoin. If they say you can't spend Bitcoin in certain ways, then you can't spend Bitcoin in certain ways.
Oh, okay. So that's a US-centric argument in the capital gains sense and all those kinds of things.
No, not only that. I just mean you're regulated by the state, which means actually you're a branch of the state. So you...
Because you agree to play by the rules and operate under these rules.
Yeah, yeah. And those rules are determined by the state.
So, yeah. So the only way to be independent is to become a pirate and hit the open seas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to bring a little bit of, you know,
sovereign
engineering theming into it. We talk about, you know, the wide open sea that's built out by cryptography, basically, that is so to be explored.
What about up?
Yeah, there? Let's do that.
So
yeah.
The other, to continue your analogy of the new world being dependent on ships from Britain, we want to flip it the other way around, right? That world should be dependent on us.
Yeah, the US managed it after a while. And yeah. Then they flipped to China.
Yeah, so, which is just another fiat system.
So how does Nostrocket play into that picture? What's your grand vision of minting more leather mints and minting more soap miners and all those types of people? How would make Nostrocket their life easier for those business owners that only want to accept Bitcoin? And
I think
that
those business owners, because they're all individuals, right? So Nostrocket won't help them.
Okay. Maybe explain what it is.
Nostrocket, in the current iteration, so Bitcoin is proof of work, which is directly using energy, forcing it through SHA-256.
Difficulty adjusted proof of work. Yeah. Important.
Yeah, but the energy is forced through a process that channels it into solving SHA-256.
Yeah.
And everything outside of that is not part of the, there's like heat and stuff that comes off as well as a byproduct, but that's not what we're doing. We're doing SHA-256, right? That's the end product.
You want to increase the range of products, if I hear you correctly.
Yes. Well, I know, but okay, so I want to funnel, so that funnels energy into SHA-256. I want to funnel energy, human energy, into something that directs towards producing something that other people want.
Okay, right? Into the Bitcoin-only economy,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
And so the simplest way I can think of to do that is... everyone who contributes to something that produces revenue, their contributions become equity in the project.
Oh, and, I see. Okay.
And, And yeah. all revenue goes directly to anyone yeah. who has equity, right?
Yeah.
There's no...
All right. So now...
It has to be non-custodial.
Now we are talking about kind of how do you organize groups of people to get something done, and how do you compensate them accordingly? And how do you build up these kind of venture business structures like the East Indian Trade Company
yeah.
to get stuff done?
I mean, yeah, there are many, many different layers of this, because if you think through it all, because, like, for example, if you have upfront funding, that then prevents you from being decentralized, because someone has to make a decision before the funding can be used. So the work can't come before a decision has been made.
Is being decentralized always good?
The only way to to do things in a way that the state can't shut down is for it to be decentralized.
Okay, I see. So that's the...
And maybe it's not possible, I don't know.
How does the mafia do it? Like, every time I think about these things, the first two things that pop into my head is, like, pirates in the open yeah. sea and the mafia.
The mafia,
or whatever, the Yakuza or whatever. Like, yeah. I I grew up close to Italy, so, like, for me it's the mafia. For other people, it's probably other things.
I mean, I think they just... They operate more like a military, right?
They are. That's kind of my point, because I think they operate outside of the state, right? Yeah. But they have hierarchies and there is centralization. Like, there is something like a mafia boss.
I mean, they always have a relationship with the state, though, and it's sometimes sure. pretty close.
Yeah.
I think they're just like a mini state within the state, in a way.
Okay.
And also, like, I mean.
So would it be fair to say that Nostrocket is an experiment in human collaboration and coordination?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think, like, organizations, the way we organize right now is sort of like, in a way, it's kind of like how we used to do open source before GitHub.
Interesting. or open source or version control before Git.
Yeah.
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 So I like that analogy. That immediately makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think we definitely need... I mean, there is a lot of scope to iterate on how we coordinate.
Yeah. Shout out to Engit, by the way, and all the projects that try to bring, GitHub to Nostr. GitHub on Nostr, basically. But yeah, okay, tell me more about it. So what's the components that you have in mind when you want to build this out? What do you need in terms of, the organizational structure that you're describing? What are the tools that you need? What are the structures that you need? What are the various roles, for example, that people would have, and so on? And how does Bitcoin play into that picture?
Well, this wouldn't be possible without Bitcoin, because you need money that can't be stopped before you can build organizations that can't be stopped.
So just the payout structure alone and the vesting structure alone and things like that are very, very easy to be shut down by the state unless you're running on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no permissionless payment system.
Yeah, other than absolutely.
Bitcoin, right? Basically. Yeah.
And by the way, we see this now with stablecoins, right?
Yeah.
Like with the big stablecoin hype and so on last couple of years. To me, stablecoins are kind of the worst of both worlds. They role play as something that's similar to Bitcoin. But it's, controlled by a company, and the money is printed by the state, and it's not censorship resistant at all.
No.
Like, it has all the worst properties that you can think of.
And the entire thing is built on proof of stake.
Sure.
Proof of stake chain, which is like another layer of fuckery.
Yeah, sure. It's like, take all the bad things, everything that Bitcoin should be against, and then you throw them into... you lock them into a room and they create a bastard child, and that's the stablecoin. And it doesn't matter which stablecoin, they're all the same. So anyway, that was my stablecoin rant. I hate stablecoins with a passion. It's complete insanity. But again, back to wrecked education. Like, I think people will need to get wrecked. And like, it just depends. Like, the censorship starts at the edges, of course, and then it's just like... freedom dies one salami slice at the time.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's just going to become the same as the banking system now, where you get shut down because you go to the wrong protest.
Yeah.
So, which kind of makes you think whether if we had to choose between value flowing from Bitcoin into stablecoins or value flowing from Bitcoin into altcoins, which one is less destructive?
Yeah. So we have two options now in terms of walking. I think we could walk this way. I think it won't be too noisy for too long.
Mm.
The other more insane option would be to walk back up and just walk in circles. What do you prefer?
Circles.
All right, circles. Let's circle.
There's less to think about.
Let's
when you walk around in circles.
All right, great. Fantastic. I like not thinking. All right, but back to the stuff you have been thinking. You've been thinking about this for like 10 years, right? Or
yeah,
more.
Yeah.
So tell me about the book that triggered that all. Like, that might be a good segue into the components and kind of what do you actually need to run something like a business.
There was a book called Reinventing Organizations by a guy called Frederic Laloux. He's French, but I guess we can overlook that.
Let's call him Fred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's call him Fred.
Fred. So Fred wrote a book.
Yeah.
What does he say?
He just, and it's been 15 years since I read this book, so memory's not going to be that accurate, but he's basically looking at different organizational structures throughout history and categorizes them into different modes of operation. There's like the military operation, which is extremely centrally planned.
So very, very strict hierarchies,
yeah.
Very strict chain of command,
yeah.
Like very like strict rules, strong hierarchical structure. Yeah. Okay.
And then there are like mafia, which is like one level above that.
Even more strict in some sense, or
no? It's less strict.
Less strict
than a military. Less centrally planned.
Okay.
And then there are like East India Company type things, where they're also centrally planned, but like not as much as a mafia. The control structure is not as direct. And then there are like the modern sort of like startups, where things are a lot more
flat.
Yeah, a lot more flat. And then there are these organizations called teal organizations, and I can't remember. I think Patagonia is sort of one of them. There's like a thing called holocracy or holocracy or something.
All right, I've never heard that term.
There's a, anyways, like, so if I recall correctly, anyway, Patagonia is one of these types of companies where like the decisions are made at the edges. You just need to convince like two other people in the organization to agree to a certain type classification of decision.
Okay,
depending on the consequences of the decision. And that's kind of where he left off.
Yeah.
It was like that one where basically there's almost no central planning at all.
Yeah.
No central decision making. But it's still owned by shareholders.
Yeah.
Right. It's still central. The ownership is still central, but the execution is very distributed.
I see.
And
since not every employee is a shareholder and so on.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's still a corporate structure. So it's still, you know, like, hey team, let's go over like that sort of stuff, right? It's like a horrible place for someone like us to work.
what radicalized you in that way? What was the horrible corporate structure you've been under? I feel like you have a past that radicalized you.
I was always like, there was never any point where I was able to tolerate any kind of group sort of, I don't even know how to, I don't have the vocabulary, but
group activities, team group building activities,
team, like any of that kind of thing, right? It's like, I'm just like, what? Like, oh, it just goes directly against everything about me, like to my bones.
So you want to be self-motivated, not motivated top-down in some
sense.
Yeah,
it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, it makes me feel a little bit sick when someone says, go team or something like that, right? So I don't understand this. Like, I'll collaborate with other people. That's fantastic. That's actually very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But not when someone else is telling me what we need to collaborate over or how we need to do it or something like this. Like,
yeah.
Or where it's like the structure is.
So you've always been allergic to authority, basically. In
yeah,
that sense.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's the. Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's the core. Yeah. Yeah. Authority.
So
I will defer to authority when I respect that authority over some particular thing that I don't know as much about. Right?
Yeah. Okay.
Like, but I'll decide when. Like, that's. I think everyone does that, right? That's
yeah.
a normal thing to do.
So the question that you're trying to ask, to answer in some sense is, how can you build an organizational structure that's similar to a company with as little authority as possible?
It has to have, it. Yeah, and so for a truly decentralized, for something to be decentralized, a commercial venture to be decentralized, I think it has to come, it can't be, we can go to a religious comparison, which is intelligent design versus evolution, right?
Okay.
I think it has to be evolution. That's the only way. It can't be intelligent design, right? That's, and so, like, can profitable ventures or, like, valuable solutions emerge from, through evolution based on simple rules?
Okay.
This is the core.
So profitability is part of the core of the question, because my go-to example to explain different organizational structures would be an open source project, right?
Yeah.
But profitability flies out of the window.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, how can you organize groups of people that are passionate about something in a way so that they actually, in the long run, basically outcompete companies in many cases,
yeah.
which is fascinating to
yeah.
me, obviously. But you specifically want to have the monetization puzzle piece in the midst of it all, right?
Because if you don't generate revenue, you can't feed.
Yeah, yeah. You have no feedback mechanism from the market.
It's also, you don't have any, there are no resources there too.
Yeah.
Like, it's
yeah, yeah. In open source, everything is voluntary, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's not sustainable, unless you're independently funded.
I mean, Linux, and I think we can see that it's sustainable. I think it depends on your definition of sustainability.
So those are that's
it's like pre-organized church. In some sense, people already gave to a local church and so on. You know, like 10% of your income, give to a good cause, give to the church. And I think what we are experiencing right now is like a lot of developers will give 10%, 20%, whatever of their time to open source projects, have a regular job, get paid well, and on the side do open
There's
source.
There's also a lot of commercial ventures, like whatever, like random company like Spotify or whatever. They allow their staff to contribute to open source projects because they're using it, and it's like, we have a problem with this, we need to fix it. So they do it themselves, and that drives it.
Yeah, there's a mix
of
incentives.
There's a lot of value there coming from, but this is not a robust way to do things. This is not what's gonna.
So you want to improve on that?
We need
to some degree.
We need some form of paradigm shift that enables us to obsolete the existing way that we organize the state itself.
Okay. Okay.
And
okay.
that has to come from the bottom up. Otherwise, we're just doing the same thing again.
So we're talking immediately about government governance and enforcement and those kind of things. So talk me through that in terms of the framework that you have in mind. What should the government structure look like? And what is the how can you enforce certain things? Like, if you have a rule set, most rules can be broken, and that's where enforcement comes into play, right? Like, that's where you need to enforce certain things. DAOs run into this all the time, right? Like, if you have a decentralized autonomous organization, and we have many of them, some of them, most of them in the shitcoin world, of course, and I think they can be useful, but they have to find questions to all these answers, right? Like, how does governance work? To some degree, we have this in the Bitcoin space as well. Just like, I mean, the current hot topic in the Bitcoin world is in part a governance. I'm not going to get into it, don't worry. But it is in part a governance question. It's like, okay, who makes the rules inside Bitcoin Core? Who is in charge of the, you know, software development plan, if you want to say that, and the releases and all those kind of things and blah, 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 blah. It's all kind of governance and also enforcement. And Bitcoin is very interesting because you have these this triangle standoff situation and the balance of powers of some sort, right?
Between
developers, users, and...
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned this because a lot of people don't understand the very core of the power, the very core of hard power over the protocol of Bitcoin. Where does it come from, right? Not many people have thought about this very deeply.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you join the Twitter discourse about that, it's obvious that most people haven't thought deep about these things.
So it's the people who receive Bitcoin as payment for something who decide what Bitcoin is.
Oh, okay. So that directly links into your mission as well. Yeah. Sure. I mean, I've said this like many years ago. Like, we'll have these fights always because no one can tell you what Bitcoin is. Yeah. You have to decide for yourself what Bitcoin is. And the moment of decision basically is exactly kind of the economic transactions that you're involved
in. It's specifically the transaction where you provide value in exchange for Bitcoin, for what you consider Bitcoin is, which is why it's important for Bitcoiners to produce something valuable to trade for Bitcoin.
I see.
Otherwise, it's going to be like BlackRock who decides what Bitcoin is.
Sure, yeah.
And this is actually part of the...
So a parallel economy of fanatical Bitcoiners is needed as part of the immune system.
Ultimately, what's needed is everyone who produces something to only accept Bitcoin.
All right. Yeah, I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
To some degree.
Yeah.
But I'm still kind of curious about the various building blocks that you would want to provide on a software level.
It has to be extremely simple set of rules, because otherwise governance does become a problem, right?
And I think it's always a problem.
I think if you
it's one of those problems that doesn't have a solution but only trade-offs.
I think we can maybe hill climb, right?
Okay.
So if the only decision you need to make is whether or not...
Oh, how did you phrase it? Fork your way to glory or something?
Yeah, which is what... If this argument gets heated up, we will fork, and
and
the market will decide.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the market right now that will decide is going to be Wall Street. They'll decide which fork is Bitcoin. So, because they're the ones who are trading the most value for Bitcoin, right? Which is fake printed USD, which for some reason people still value.
So, okay, I see.
So that's the problem we're in. The most valuable thing that's being traded for Bitcoin right now is USD, right? So
yeah, I see.
Yeah, stable coins.
Okay. Oh, damn stable coins. what are you thinking in terms of what simple governance that you have in mind that you think?
What could work is
let's just as comparison, like what works, for example, in the fiat world right now, what most people use or what many people do is like an LLC, right? Like do you have a comparison table of like LLC or public company or whatever, those kind of things, or like family office, you know,
no,
single person business?
Not really.
How it would map to your world?
No, because it's a different paradigm. So,
okay.
There's no direct mapping, although there's some. I guess you could use analogies. So the board of directors who make the decisions on how money is being spent in a company. The only decision they are making is when to issue new shares. If we limit it to that, then the only decision anyone who has equity in the organization needs to make is under what circumstances, like how do we issue, when do we create new equity?
Okay. Right?
And we can narrow that down to what problem did you solve for the organization where you should be, and what is the value of that contribution?
It immediately brings you into the Oracle problem.
How?
If you make a bar of soap, how does any system know about it?
No, there's just you. If you want equity in the organization, you submit a request. Let's say we have some.
Yeah, but you could lie. That's my point.
Yeah, but
I make a request to get more shares because I produced 700 bars of soap in the last week.
No, okay. Let's take a step back, sir.
All right,
sir.
I'm making this up on the spot. You know.
Yeah. I see the rabbit hole that you just went down. It's the wrong direction.
Sorry. Okay. Get me out of it. Okay.
So, let's say for example, let's say Amethyst, right? They adopt the Gnostic methodology of organization.
Okay.
Okay. The first thing to do is Vitor up with the value of what his work so far for this project is worth.
Okay.
How many hours he spent, whatever. And you'd probably want to do that for all the contributors so far, right?
They do that right now, right? They have subsplits in every new release.
Okay, but let's add up all of their contributions based on like how much time, effort, or now like tokens they've spent on doing it, right? And then.
But that's back to the labor theory of value.
No. Sir.
How no?
Just wait.
Okay.
Okay.
I can spend tokens all day and produce nothing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but anyone who doesn't see through that is an idiot.
Yeah.
Right. So Vitor knows how much his work is worth because that's how much he would need to be paid to continue doing it.
Okay, continue.
He states that as a request for equity.
Okay.
The current, and if he's the first person doing this, then he just approves it himself. And so that's the initial equity.
Okay.
So, and if he is dishonest about that, then that's the end of people being interested in this endeavor, right?
Because everyone is smart and everyone looks through every scheme.
Well, if he says his value is like, like 10 million USD, then like, and then the value of my contribution is like a dollar, but we've spent like a similar amount of time, then I'm just gonna be like, no, okay, I'm just gonna fork that and do it my own way, right? So this comes down to like who is enforcing the fair authority of the project, right?
Okay.
It's the founder.
Okay.
So if the founder...
I understand the forking mechanics if you remain in cyberspace. For any real stuff, that's way harder.
Okay, so real stuff, I don't know yet.
Stay in cyberspace.
Stay in cyberspace first.
No bars of soap, only kind of, you know, features of Gnostic clients.
Okay, so let's say new Gnostic client. You build a new Gnostic client.
Okay.
You spend 2 days on it, and you think that's worth like 1,000 USD. Okay? Then you
I incorporate in Gnostic Arcade.
You you just the broad concept is that you then request from yourself. You basically create that 1,000 USD worth of equity in a project at the current value of the project, which is
zero.
Which is you can value it at something though, right? You can value it. You can decide. So, but I think basically. One sat for, I think a good starting point is just have like one sat for one, I call them merits, not equity. Because equity is not exactly the right term, but so one sat per merit, right? Because there is no market for this yet, right? So we don't know the value, but you just start at one sat. It doesn't really matter where you start it. We just say it's one sat per like one sat of worth of your work is one merit of equity, right? Then you ask like someone else, you ask Pablo to contribute. And he can see...
I would never.
It would be a bad idea, but just... So then Pablo comes along and he sees that the amount you've stated is, it makes sense based on what he can see in terms of the actual contribution. He solves a problem, he contributes something somehow. His amount is probably like quite similar to yours because it's an early stage thing. So then now you have basically, he sends in a merit request and a request for equity. And then you have to decide whether or not to approve that, because you're the only one who can vote right now, because you have all of the equity. Right? So then we build up a cap table of equity this way.
Okay.
And if you are dishonest in your conduct, other intelligent people, and why would you want non-intelligent people to be contributing? Other intelligent people are not going to be interested, right? And if you reject someone's request, which is fair, then that's the end of them contributing, and other people will also see that. They won't contribute, though they can still fork your project. But if you're fair about it, and everyone else is fair, basically this rewards honesty more than dishonesty.
Okay, in right. theory.
In theory. We'll find out.
Devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want dumb people, definitely, because some basically robots, right? Amazon warehouse workers, for
but
example.
We have this now. It's Claude and...
fair enough.
I think when you expand into broader things, yeah, like in there's good, like, let's say like you organize a conference based on this technique, then you need people to do like arrange tables or
yeah.
like there's a bunch of like yeah so yeah
yeah yeah but, unskilled labor
yeah but it still comes down to the project fairly will always outcompete the ones that are run unfairly, because they'll attract better contributors, right? Because you're basically
a base axiom of your belief, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I won't challenge you.
I think the market will sort that out.
I think to your argument, unfair system are similar to authoritarian systems.
Yeah.
Which means they need to spend energy and time and resources to enforce.
Yes, exactly.
Stuff to crack down, like cracking down on stuff, it takes a lot of energy.
Yep.
And in the long run, a self-organizing system that doesn't need that much enforcement and doesn't have this crackdown problem and all those kind of things and isn't authoritarian, outcompetes an authoritarian system.
Yeah.
It's like the jungle outcompetes. Whatever, like I don't have another I don't have the counter now. But no, I actually have it. The greenhouse. The jungle will outcompete the greenhouse in the long term, because the greenhouse needs upkeep, the greenhouse needs people to keep things in check and so on. And over like a thousand years, the jungle will outcompete the greenhouse.
Yeah.
The greenhouse will just break down and wither away, and someone will not be able to pay the upkeep, and that's just it.
It's I think like Piaget wrote about this. It's like a Piagetian balance.
Not a French dude.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Damn French.
There are a few.
I'm not sure if it's stable coins or French, but it's close.
So that's why I think these organizations will just crush the traditional system. If you figure out.
If it ever starts working.
If it starts working.
Yeah. Okay. So similar in the sense that Linux outcompeted Microsoft servers and open source projects outcompete commercial projects in the long run. Like it's always in the long run.
And open source models will outcompete the closed source.
Yeah, for example, local models will outcompete the centralized brain and so on. That's actually a similar like jungle greenhouse discussion, because we have a monoculture, multiculture thing going on, like a centralized brain will crumble under monoculture dynamics, which will be an issue, I predict,
yeah.
I think. But anyway, so that's your grand vision for a new organization, a new style of organizational structuring in cyberspace.
Mm-hmm.
Let's ignore the soaps.
Yeah, for now.
For now.
Although I think we'll figure it out.
It's based around basically contribution merit, which translates to equity, and you're paid out in sats.
Yes.
Is that a fair
summary? You're paid
out
in sats. You're paid out in revenue. If the project generates revenue, then you...
So sat flows. You get a sat flow split.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, cool. Yeah, sat flows. Sat flows are the like, it's all about sat flows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Like if you look at your personal life, I had this long thread. I'll have to link to it. I mean, I can't. It's fucking, you know, nuked by Twitter years ago. I have an archive somewhere. I'll dig it out and I'll link to it. And it was about basically stop thinking about, first of all, dollar value, and in terms of stacking sets, don't obsess over the numbers. Don't obsess over the numerology of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You have certain economic inflows and you have certain economic outflows, which are your spending. If you're an individual, if you're a company, it's also your suppliers, all those kind of things. And basically the name of the game is, like, the difference between your inflows and your outflows is your balance. And the stuff that you don't, that, like, if your balance increases over time, that's your savings. And so you have to maximize your inflows. Mm-hmm. You maximize your economic inflows by, again, like, producing soap, whatever.
Yeah.
Or, like, clients with features that hopefully people will pay for. And reduce your outflows, like, spend less than you make and so on. And whatever you can afford to save, save it in Bitcoin. And that's basically what that translates to, what actually is now a thing. Like, we went from a stay humble stack sets to, like, the third line, stay humble stack sets, focus on your craft, right? It's like, get really good at what you're good at, and that will make you useful in society. It will allow you to earn money. And I kind of, like, the point of the whole thread was to, I drew it, and, like, it's literally like a green income stream and, like, a red outflow stream and so on. And the point was to get the point across that it doesn't matter whether you earn, like, that's counter to your point, by the way. It doesn't matter whether you earn euro or USD or Japanese yen or whatever. As long as you're saving in Bitcoin, you're still gold.
Yeah, that's true.
And so you just have to save and hold in Bitcoin. And of course, over the long run, I mean, I am in this position. Like, I earn Bitcoin exclusively. And I, like all my, I still have books on Amazon. So I still have, like, you know, a little bit of fiat income, but it's negligible. And all, most of my spending is in Bitcoin as well. So I live on a full Bitcoin standard. All my savings are in Bitcoin, basically. I don't have any savings. I don't have any Bitcoin, like, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
We just were in a boat before, so, like, that goes without saying. But I think that's also what happened to a lot of people. Like, if you start doing that, your savings will be like 1% is in Bitcoin. A couple of years pass, and then it's like, it's not 1% anymore. Maybe it's like 10 or 20. And another couple of years pass, and it's very quickly going to be 90. With things are going, like, fiat is only going down. Bitcoin hopefully not going down as much as fiat. And so I think rephrasing everything about economic inputs and outputs makes a lot of sense, not only on the individual level, but also on an organizational level.
Although, one key requirement of this would be that it's non-custodial, right? So
you have to hold it yourself.
Yeah.
You have to hold Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I don't count Bitcoin exposure as holding Bitcoin.
The organization can't hold anything. It's just a conduit.
Oh, interesting. So then we get into, what does it mean to hold Bitcoin, and can it be done in a multisig kind of question?
Well, you don't need to hold anything in a multisig.
Because you do the payouts all the time. So everything flows through the system all the time. Okay, but
you don't want to hold Bitcoin on behalf.
Yeah, but that kind of doesn't work in the economic sense of, like, you know, I can't stream a cow, you know. Like, in cyberspace it might work, but it's you need capital formation, and you can't.
Okay, but the what you need capital formation for is to acquire, like, inputs, right?
Like, if I want to sell steak, I can't stream the cow. You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yes,
you have to raise the cow, you have to,
but,
like, and then you'll get a bunch of money all at once, but it took you a long time to raise the cow.
Yeah. But I think as the organizations grow bigger, it's acceptable. So what people are doing in these organizations is giving the organization credit, which is their time and effort, right? Or whatever they're giving it. But it can also be a cow, right?
Speaking of cows, I'm really hungry. Should we do one more round?
Yeah,
and then, like, once we head down with all the
things, we'll go find a cow.
We'll go find a cow. I'll stream some cow in my mouth.
Yeah. So everything becomes a request for merits.
Okay.
So all the inputs.
So that's basically, that's your, that's the cornerstone of the whole thing, is the merit-based system, request for merit, which is like, I understand it as like a share.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a share in the SAT flow.
Okay. But then if it is merit-based, like it relies, the whole system relies on human judgment, right?
Yeah, but it's adversarial judgment. So you are submitting a merit request, so you value your, whatever you're providing, you value that yourself, and you're taking a risk because maybe you don't want to prove
it. I mean, that's just like a negotiation for a salary, right? In some sense.
In some sense, yeah.
Here is what I want to have, and then the other party comes back to you, no way, like maybe I'm going to pay you half.
Yeah. But I think generally speaking, if you're like honest about the, either way, it's fine, because like if you honestly believe in the value that's the value that you just provide, that to you, to continue doing this, you would need this much value. Then if they say no, then it just means you can't continue doing that anyway. It doesn't make sense. And then if that's because of, if they're rejecting that because of dishonesty, like they don't want to, they want to keep all the merits, right? Then, well, that's the end of that project, right? And you can fork that and just do it your own way, and you become the authority now.
All right.
So this is why it basically, the more honest you are, the more you're going to get out of the system.
I mean, I think that's true in principle. I would agree with you kind of in the long run. I think that's like all the big religions, or Christianity in particular, has going for it. It's like basically, the best way to live life is to never lie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you won't go very far. And I think, you know, because people are...
It adds friction.
Human, massively. I mean, you have to keep all the lies in your head and so on and build up these separate worlds that don't exist.
Yeah.
But also, humans are very good at, you know, they have reputation machines, basically.
Yeah.
Like, very good at remembering.
Which actually is another interesting thing, which is... So this whole thing also came about because... we need to build organizational structures that are immune to takeover by psychopaths.
Okay, but that's really hard.
I think this solves it.
Okay.
Yeah. They can operate within this if they don't do the psychopath thing.
You just fork your way. But that only works in cyberspace. We're back to the enforcement thing, kind of. No? I think?
I think
if you can easily fork, then I would agree
to
some extent. And we see this with open source projects. Where there's lots of psychopathic people at the head of open source projects, and sometimes the other contributors just like, you know, fork him away.
Yeah.
So I would agree with that, but with in real world scenarios, I think it's harder. It's like forking away a bad king, right?
But they only got in there by, they only got that position. They can't get that position in the first place, because it doesn't matter how much talking they do. They're not going to get the equity unless someone approves it. So like,
yeah, but people can be convinced, and people can be swindlers, and you know, some of the most powerful people were very convincing and charming, even though they didn't tell the whole truth.
Yeah, sure.
There was this one Austrian guy who, you know, was a great painter.
Yeah, he was a good painter, and I mean, we have to, you know, you have to separate the man from the art
always. Yeah, but you get my point, right? Like, and I think this happens in open source projects as well, where it's just, it takes a long while until you figure out that someone is actually insane or bullshitting or what have you.
But well, this pushes that, this brings that to a head immediately, because they're asking for equity based on the problem they've solved and the value of solving that problem, right? And so the discussion happens right then and there. Like, is this guy full of shit or not?
Yeah, but it's still a subjective evaluation. So you always have kind of differing opinions.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this actually important?
I mean,
is this actually valuable?
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
You know, like right now in the
space. But you decide that by when you go to a shop.
Differing opinions on on-chain apps, for example.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But you,
so
you
is it actually valuable
this,
or no?
You decide this in the same way as whether you're going to buy something, buy a product or service in the market, though, right? So you see straight through whether.
Okay. So, all right. I really tried to wrap my head around it. I think I understand it better now. So thanks for all that. Let's switch gears completely. Step one, you have to pull out your phone and tell me where we're going to go, because probably there's some other people that already found
the cow. Let's see.
And step two is, I don't know, I'm just going to ask you random shit until we...
Yeah, till we get there.
Until we find something to eat. That's the plan. And take a dime. Don't worry. It's like the three listeners. Like, most people drop off after 5 seconds of noise, so the 1.5 listeners that are still listening won't mind.
Okay, I just messaged the group. Let's see what happens.
We'll just walk into the whatever center, I think, and it's just going to be a different kind of conversation. I have no idea what I'm going to ask you. Maybe, I don't know, like, how have you been cooking on the agent side and those kind of things? Because you told me you want to return to Nostrocket and kind of build it out some more.
Yeah.
So how would you do it from the kind of your...
I'm going to build a...
DevOps perspective.
So, well, okay, let's go even more abstract.
All right.
I'm going to build a...
last 45 minutes weren't abstract enough.
Yeah.
Let's go.
I'm going to build a new kind one client.
Okay.
And I've got some ideas about that, but I won't go into all of it. But Humble Horse, the Humble Horse client is going to be coming back.
Okay.
And then I'm going to build the Rocket system into that.
Okay. We should actually probably go this way. Thereabouts.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah,
where
yeah.
the
yeah,
that's the right direction. Okay, so you're gonna build a new client, and you're gonna build Nostrocket into this new client.
Yes. So because the value, I think one key issue with getting this to actually work is that it can't be built for the sake of building it and then try and get other people to use it. I need to build it for a product that I'm making.
Okay.
And build it around that, and then I'll run into the correct problems that I need to solve
okay.
for the next step, right? Because it needs to be advised by running up into the real world.
Okay. So, yeah, yeah. You want to actually bring it to market and then see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm building a kind one client to do that, and on the development side, I've been working on an agent harness. Specific to that application, so an application-specific agent harness.
Okay, interesting.
So that it's
what
very
do you
easy.
Use?
I'm building it. I've been playing with like Pi and a few other harnesses, but I think the real value, the real sort of thing to do next is in how you use basically like a genetic algorithm approach to solving problems and gate that by and how you gate that, right? So like tests and whatever, right?
Like, okay,
but going beyond
so
tests,
similar to like but a genetic approach is different from fast testing, for example.
Yeah,
so you want to evolve your solutions.
Yeah. And I think if we can figure out how to evolve things rather than explicitly define them up front, I think that's when we can really unlock something next level that we haven't seen yet. So, but then also at the same time, how do you not break things? That's with the traditional way of doing that is with tests, but I think also we can use formal methods. Have you heard of something called TLA Plus?
TLA Plus.
It's created
by... I'm
not sure. It's a thing that you can use to model a state machine to verify that it doesn't go into any states that are unexpected.
My formal specification training is like 15 years ago or so.
Okay.
So I know a little bit about these things, but I'm not up to date with kind of the state of the art.
That's okay. It's basically like validating that the code is... the code accurately implements
the
math.
Yeah, it actually does what the spec says
yeah.
it does.
Yeah.
I mean, all those ideas are...
Yeah. So I think if we use that as the gate for...
So what you're trying to say is if you're out for the harness, okay.
Yeah.
How so?
Like, well...
Because I was thinking that the simple rules you described should obviously be kind of verifiable and those kind of things. But but for the harness, I don't get it. Like, what's the where would you need a formal proof system or a formal specification for your harness system?
So that you don't break things that exist already, essentially. Is this a more advanced, a more reliable way of doing testing?
Okay.
If you're building something for a Nostr client, it's not necessary. But I was just using it as an example. For a Nostr client, you just need tests. That's enough, I think.
Okay.
To gate everything by tests. As long as the testing is really good. So basically, what I want to end up with is a harness that makes it very easy for other people to contribute to the project. So they don't have to adapt. They don't have to spin up their own harness and figure out how to build, how to add features or whatever to this project. They just use the existing harness. And that has everything coded in there already. Has all the, and it manages the context correctly for that particular project. So this is optimized for this specific stack and this specific application.
I mean, you're not alone. Lots of people are building out specific stacks and specific harnesses and agent systems for their use case.
Yeah. But this is, I want it specifically for one app.
Okay.
To develop one particular app. Right. So which is a Nostr client.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's easy for anyone to contribute. And then they put in and users can add feedback or report problems or whatever. And that just goes into the problem tree, and then anyone can solve those problems.
Okay.
And then they get equity.
I feel like I have a very left side of the bell curve version of that, in the sense that I have, for all my little side projects, I have like one agent per project. I showed you this before very briefly. Uh-huh. You know, like I can DM no solutions.
Oh, yeah.
And say like, you know, transcribe this episode or change the title or whatever. And I have some others where it's actually like every night cron jobs run that just go through open GitHub issues. And if it's easy enough, then it just tags it and creates a PR for it.
Yep.
And then I as the human, look over the PR and merge.
Yeah.
So similar idea in some sense, I think, right?
Yeah,
where it's just make it very easy for other people to contribute, which I use the regular GitHub development flow, basically. So if someone created an issue, I won't even have to fix it. Like, it will be picked up automatically, and so on. I just do the review. And the
So in this situation, you would get all the merits for the tokens burned to do this.
Okay. Yeah.
But if someone else jumps in, they can get it.
All right. How are we looking on the cow front? You know where we are?
Let's
where we're going?
Let's see.
Or no?
No one's replied.
Yeah, we're out cold.
Well, 7 minutes. I sent it the message 7 minutes ago.
We'll have to find our own place.
No,
I don't know.
Someone will reply.
We'll make it. We'll not starve. But I'm proper hungry.
Okay.
I'm proper hungry and close to out of steam.
All right. Let's go find food.
So,
I don't want to be around a hungry Gigi.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I'm not as hangry as I used to be.
Oh, okay. That's an improvement then.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. I grew up a bit. I try at least. But how can people help? Like, if you want to build this out and make this a thing, like, what would be step one? Like, read the book you mentioned, or like, what is something actionable?
That's an interesting book.
What is something actionable that people can do to help you out and make this vision a reality?
Just ask me questions about it.
On Nostr?
Yeah. That'll get me thinking about things that I haven't thought about yet.
Okay. So just they can
look at the
pick your brain. If someone was listening and everything made perfect sense, just DM you.
Or if you think I'm an idiot, tell me why.
No, I'm still having trouble wrapping my head around it, but I think I'm too wedded to the things I know. I'm too wedded to the traditional structures of like, this is how a startup works, this is how like the things you mentioned, this is how the military works, this is how a regular organization works, this is how a regular cap table comes together, whatever. This is how a board of directors works, and they have all these roles and so on.
Yeah.
And so what I'm kind of, to me it's, and I think you would say this is a feature, not a bug, I would guess. Like, to me it's just, too undefined, like not strongly defined enough, but I think that's exactly what you want to fight against.
It's actually very clearly defined. This is much, the rules are much simpler.
That's the you have the merit points and the merit leads to shares basically and so on. Yeah. I do understand this in like an open source system context. I think it gets very hairy very quickly once you move out of that. And I still think that the what has merit and what hasn't isn't an easy answer, and how to measure merit is also not easy.
The person who produces the work, measure it themselves.
But then you're back to again the salary negotiation.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah,
this is how.
And then you have salary negotiation tactics, and so there's always people that are overpaid and there's people that are underpaid. Everyone knows this in every company. Like there's always someone who pulls a lot of weight and is very shy and humble.
Yeah.
And there's always other people that just oversell themselves and just are great talkers and have like a big personality and don't do shit. And they just, they're by definition completely
Right, but this collapses that into what problem did you solve?
So in some sense, it's a shorter feedback loop and a closer feedback loop in some sense. Okay.
I think fuckery gets detected
early,
quickly when you see.
I mean, open so- to be fair, like open source projects are extremely merit based. So you have that going for you in your line of argumentation, basically, where it's very hard to bullshit your way through open source usually, and just because everything. Transparent, to use that word.
And also,
like you can see what people are doing.
Yeah, and it's also a bunch of people who have the same, a similar level of expertise or backgrounds.
Yeah, yeah. Like exactly. It's not an HR person that checks you, that checks your merit, but it's your peers that check your merit, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yes, peers.
Yeah, yeah. Let's end on that.
Yeah.
Because I'm super cooked. I'm super hungry. I always end on a hug. Thanks for
that's
doing
a,
that.
That's a good way to end.
And indulging me. And yeah, we'll see what people think.
Yeah.
I think it's more clear for me now what you want to build. And yeah, I hope you'll get a lot of DMs.
We'll see.
Yeah. You'll get a lot of GMs at least.
GMs, yeah.
We'll get a lot of GMs. That's what's going to happen.